Hot.
So one of the things that I said earlier, the distinction between Israel as a country and Zionism. Mm. I haven't spent a whole bunch of time studying that, but I've listened to a few pieces, and I know that there's a distinction there. Obviously, there's a distinction there. And I know you've probably spent more time working on something like this, so maybe we could talk about that some other time.
Yeah. I, in fact, a tribute to Jesse Jackson that I did, since the long piece from Alternative Radio that was set up, the... he gave a Harvard talk, which was around the I Have It, Keep Hope Alive era. Mm-hmm. But since that was already played, I was going to play it, but it already went out. So I played a segment from the Emergency Summit on Gaza that Rainbow Push did, you know, in January, just three or four months after the October 7th incursions.
Okay.
So that was my tribute. And I paid something from Rabbi Brent Rosen, who is an anti-Zionist rabbi in Chicago. He's a great guy. He was down here a decade and a half ago. He should come down again, because we need that kind of authentically Jewish voice. We're doing a little do-si-do here.
Yes, we do. I'm trying to grab the mic over here while you take the seat. Yeah. This is that community radio transition.
We've rehearsed all this stuff by now.
Yes, indeed. So as our predecessor, Mr. John Lee Johnson, would say, stay out of trouble. But as John Lewis, Paul Muth, and A-Dub like to say, get in the right kind of trouble. Peace and much love to you.
Thanks for your work. That was a great show today.
Thank you.
Let's see. Since we've been reworking the board and things have been somewhat successful, I'm on a different system for playback at this point, and I'm having just a little bit of trouble getting there, so why don't I run down what we'll hear. Some Code Pink, a fair amount of Code Pink. My main man who's gotten through his pledge drive, I don't know how successful KPFA's drive was, but they were working on it. Yeah, I was insomniac again last night, so bear with me. And we'll start with some Umia Abu Jamal. Maybe that'll get me enough time to find my USB device on the other computer where it doesn't pop up like it ought to. But Pink Notes is a new feature that they're going to do weekly at Flashpoints. And then I've got a bit of an excerpt of Code Pink's own podcast, where hopefully get to the section where they talk about the gentleman senator from South Carolina who's so belligerent, he's berating the Gulf states for not joining in the war that they opposed from the beginning. And let's see where prison radio is. And opinions, of course, are those of the speakers, not necessarily others here at the station manager, board of directors, associates. I was a week late on the associates meeting and missed it consequently. I hate when I do that, but I'm still not seeing. I might have to go to Plan B here. What would it be? Okay, why don't we hear Mumia from another device, since I'm sort of queued up for that. Hopefully. If I didn't say it, WEFT, Champaign Urbana, listener-sponsored, volunteer-operated radio. Probably that was in Aaron's formula, but just to make sure. You know where you're tuned into.
Before the war, as bombs explode and wreak havoc across the Middle East, what will come of this? This question arises because of events that happened over 70 years ago, 1953 to be exact, when spies from the CIA and British intelligence hatched a plan to remove Iran's democratically elected leader, Mohammad Mossadegh, removed from power because he supported the nationalization of his country's vast oil reserves. The spies, acting on behalf of U.S. and British oil companies, used their puppet, the Shah of Iran, to declare that Mossadegh be held on house arrest, which sparked wide anti-Shah protests in the country. This imperial plot of regime change by foreigners sparked the subsequent revolution in Iran that forced the Shah into exile some years later and led to the rise of the rule of the clerics. Regime change can lead to unexpected consequences. For as history has taught us, regime change can become the mother of revolutions. So be careful what you wish for. With love, not fear, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio.
Okay.
How y'all doing out there?
Plan B
this
there,
is Fallouz Bixby, the author, guy.
Took me a while to navigate a directory
today,
here.
All eyes on me.
Not on
I want to get everybody out there in the public.
Computer.
I need you to all.
Well, I didn't mention
this,
I've got Marjorie Cohn from
people,
a few days
Facebook,
ago, but
we want everybody to know about these things, right?
The legalities.
Now look at federal case number in Northern District, Ohio. Case number 1-26-CV-218, Fallouz Bixby versus ODRCA. Yeah? There's two prisons within the vicinity where the water's horrible. They got sanctioned years ago about this water, was told to fix it. They never did. There's so many things going on. Airmart, which is
also
the company that took over our food source back in the day. We got
every other week.
We had our own food, and we had slaughterhouses where people were getting jobs and so forth. Well, our governor at the time was Teddy Sturgeon. Now, keep this in mind. Teddy Sturgeon used to work for ODRC. He was a mental health doctor. He retired from mental health, became the governor of Ohio. His wife was the CEO of Airmark. And then, guess what happens when he becomes governor? They do away with all of our industries and the prison systems, the slaughterhouses and our food, and they contract Airmart. Airmart has different levels of food, right? Now, we get the lowest grade there is. They supply food to, like, stadiums and all the stuff like that, and they get the great food.
Pink Notes.
We get the horrible food, and this is no joke. Our food is not even eligible to be donated to other countries because it's such a low-grade type food. Now, back to the seriousness of this case I filed. So
maybe a little bit of
I filed the case. The judge turns around and tells me now everybody knows that inmates are supposed to be able to move for free and make payments to the court. The judge said that he wasn't going to allow me to make payments. He made me pay the $405 filing fee in order to proceed in court. And then he said that I was possibly delusional based on the things that I was saying about the water and everything else. So I turned around and submitted a mental health report. The first 7 pages of my appendix and my brief was a report because I got sent to a mental hospital back in 2021 whenever the government tried to kill me. And it was proven then by an investigation team, and they contacted the feds and everybody, that they actually tried to poison me and kill me, and it's in the documents.
Every Thursday, we're happy to collaborate with Code Pink. Our regular collaborator is Cynthia Papermaster. She's Code Pink Bay Area. And we have a special guest, don't we, Cynthia? I think people have heard of her. She's a good friend of the show. Madea Benjamin, welcome to Pink Notes.
Hey, nice to be on with you, Dennis. And a big shout out to Cynthia.
Hey,
all right,
yeah.
Well, And what I'm going to do is ask you, Medea, to just talk a little bit about some of the key issues that you've been deeply engaged with. And then Cynthia is going to want to jump in and talk a little bit about the nature of resistance and what people can do at various levels. And I thought it would be good. You've written a lot about the Middle East. You've written a lot about Iran. Do you want to give us a sense of your thinking on it, where we are right now? It is certainly a dangerous moment in history.
Absolutely, Dennis. It's so appalling. You know, I consider myself so naive, even at my age, because I never thought Trump would invade Iran. I thought, oh, come on. These people know better than that. They know. I mean, not only yeah. did he say how stupid the war in Iraq was, but, yeah. you know, calls himself the peace president, has to have people in the Pentagon who are saying, no, this would be a terrible idea, and then goes ahead and does it, and now finds himself exactly where so many of us knew it would be, which is a quagmire with no exit strategy and killing all of those girls on the first day so that the entire world sees what the U.S. is doing and how appalled people are. So, and, you know, this is the least, the war that with the least amount of public support that we have had in my lifetime. And it's quite astounding that we are in the midst of this with Trump looking for an exit strategy and Iran saying, hey, we're not just going to stop when you say it's over.
Medea, the New York Times has given extraordinary cover to the administration. This notion of, well, yes, they did kill 175 kids, 175 people, mostly children. But it was, they had, you know, it was the Iranians. They moved the place close to the military barracks, and they just had old information. So it was a mistake. How do you articulate that use of the word mistake?
Well, it's absolutely appalling, just like the use of the word excursion that Trump has used. This, what we're doing in Iran is an excursion. There are so many ways that they are trying to spin this, and the propaganda is just disgusting. But, you know, one thing I am amazed at is how many American people see through the propaganda this time. And it's amazing to see the base of the Republican Party, especially the younger people, say, this is not what we voted for. This is not what we thought you were all about. This is not what we want to spend more than $1 billion a day on. And of course, this issue now about the price of gas, you know, that they're going nuts to try to release the strategic reserves, both in the U.S. and globally, so that people won't immediately start paying $5 a gallon at the pump. This is going to be more and more unpopular as each day goes by. And I think Trump just doesn't know what to do.
And let's not forget that price of gas, if you will, should be measured in the streets of Iran, where the bombing of the refineries have released toxins into the water systems, into the air systems. People are going to be dying and suffering for a long time if this thing stopped yesterday. So this is another part of the situation that desperate. We could talk about it all day. We could talk about Gaza, which is in an extreme situation. But I do want to bring you back into this hemisphere. And let's talk a little bit about the Monroe Doctrine and what life looks like for Venezuela. And now, are you concerned that Trump has his sights on Cuba? You all have been spending a lot of time on that.
Yes, we have. And just one more thing on the Iran issue is that this administration is going to be asking for another $50 billion for this horrific war. And I hope everybody listening will be calling in to congresspeople and saying not a penny for this, certainly not another $50 billion. And in terms of Latin America, the U.S., this Trump administration with Marco Rubio at the lead, is trying to create an alliance of all of these right-wing leaders in Latin America in order to squeeze out any progressive countries that still remain. That's why they went in and kidnapped Maduro and now are taking over the oil in Venezuela. But they have their sights set on Cuba, where they're imposing the most inhumane kind of blockade that includes not only the sanctions that have been going on for decades now, but this idea of not any oil coming to Cuba, not letting Venezuela send oil, Mexico send oil, excruciating kind of shortages in Cuba right now. And that's why we have been going every few months taking food and medicines. And now we're very excited on March 20th to be leaving in our group alone. In our charter alone is 130 people going. There are hundreds of people coming from the United States, Canada, Latin America, converging in Cuba on March 21st to say we're in solidarity with the Cuban people. They are not alone. And we will do everything we can to oppose the horrific Trump/Rubio policy of strangling the Cuban people.
You are listening to Medea Benjamin on Pink Notes. This is our collaboration with Code Pink. Also with us is Cynthia Papermaster. She's our regular weekly co-host for Pink Notes. Cynthia?
Well, thank you for the update, Medea. Thank you so much. I want to hear more about the situation with Venezuela and the fact that the president and first lady are in jail in New York City. What can we do about that?
We just got back from Venezuela in a delegation where we just got a glimpse of how incredibly contradictory and complicated the situation is. On the positive side, government efforts, what they call the Bolivarian Revolution or the Chavismo from Hugo Chavez, is still intact in many ways, not only having Delcy Rodriguez and in power and many of the supporters of the revolution in the National Assembly, but also they have not changed their budget in terms of being able to allocate funds to try to help the economic crisis they've been in because of U.S. sanctions. Yet, on the other hand, they've had to make terrible concessions. One is losing their president and first lady to the U.S. prison system, the U.S. killing over 100 people in the process, the U.S. now forcing, quote, better conditions for U.S. oil companies, and then most recently for the mining companies, particularly for gold. So Delcy Rodriguez is doing the best that she can under these circumstances, but it really is such a terrible moment in our history to see the U.S. going back to the 1832 Monroe Doctrine with the twist now of the Donroe Doctrine, as they call it, basically saying the U.S. is the hegemon in the region and will do whatever it takes to make sure that it has control over the resources and the people of Latin America and the Caribbean.
And are we making an effort to try to get them released from U.S. custody? What's happening with that?
Yes. I mean, we think in a way that they have a good case because it's such bogus charges that they have. But in any event, you know, these things drag on for a long time. And in some ways, what this is for Trump is a bargaining chip. And there is a group in New York City that's been going out in front of the detention center doing protests there. Whenever there is a court appearance, they try to pack the courtroom with supporters. We did meet with Maduro's son, who is in the National Assembly, and he was just a lovely, not-so-young man who was saying that he talks to his father every single day, that his father's spirits are high because he knows that he didn't commit these crimes he's being charged with. We can write letters to them, and Code Pink has put on its website the place that you can go to write letters, and they really appreciate getting those letters. In fact, Maduro reads portions of those letters to his son when they have the calls. And so, yes, those are some of the things that we can do to be supporting them.
Okay. Thank you so much.
And again, let me jump in. This is Dennis Bernstein with Cynthia Papermaster. This is our weekly collaboration with Code Pink. We call it Pink Notes. We're honored to have with us Medea Benjamin today, co-founder of Code Pink. And Medea, these are definitely terrible times. It's hard to imagine that we have somebody in the White House that is one step away from a dictatorship. It's easy to cross that line and not know it. What are your barometers now? What are you watching closely? What needs most to be restrained most swiftly?
I think we have to send this very strong message about not giving any more of our money when this $50 billion request comes up, I think that we have to be pushing our representatives to introduce more War Powers Acts and push those. There were even some Democrats who voted with the Republicans. We've been going to their offices and raising holy hell with them about how could they vote to give away their authority as members of Congress to in what the Constitution says is their obligation to declare war, and it's not the president. So that's one thing. And we are pushing for our people not to forget Gaza and to pay attention to what is happening in Lebanon, because it's just so horrific. I mean, 500,000 people displaced, just so many deaths and destruction. So to not forget the people of Lebanon and Gaza while we
focus. Yeah, talk about, say a little bit more about that. I should have asked you in the context of when we were talking about the war against Iran, but just say a little bit more about that, because that is, that's really essentially the untold horror of what's unfolding here. The Israelis are going absolutely wild, feeling absolutely free to bomb civilian neighborhoods, commit daily war crimes. What did we report the other day? They were using ambulances to transport soldiers. That was revealed again.
Well, what they're doing in Lebanon is just beyond belief. When I look at these photos of them blowing up the buildings in Beirut, in southern Lebanon, forcing people to leave all of the villages in southern Lebanon, 500,000 people displaced. I mean, huge numbers. And many of them were with nowhere to go, because if you are Shia, the people are afraid to rent you, to give you help, because they're afraid that they will be attacked for housing you, because the bombs are going off not only in southern Lebanon, but in places like Beirut. While the eyes are on Iran, the Israelis are also focusing on the West Bank and increased horrors for the Palestinian people in the West Bank. The situation in Gaza, since the war began with Iran, has become worse, with the Israelis closing the Rafah border that was supposed to be open, once again not allowing the food and medicine that's supposed to be coming in, not allowing the people in and out that are supposed to be allowed in and out, and striking Lebanon. So all of this happening at the same time that the world is focusing on Iran.
It's amazing. Final word, final question, Cynthia?
Oh, thank you. Nadia, are they using white phosphorus? Is Israel using white phosphorus in these attacks on Lebanon? One last little thing is, there's a tremendous amount of fear and despair right now. And I just want to say how much I appreciate that you keep going. And I want to encourage people listening to go to codepink.org, find actions there on our action calendar, and join us in the streets, join us in pushing on our Congress members. And yeah, my question was about the white phosphorus. Thank you.
You know, I am not 100% certain about the white phosphorus, but I certainly know that the bombs that they are using are incinerating people. People are just disappearing. And this happened in Venezuela as well, these high-tech weapons we have. In the case of what we can do, I mean, the only thing that gives me any hope is to get out there and be in action. You know, we've been going every week to the Congress, whether we're going to hearings or we're going directly to their offices. We were in the offices today of Lindsey Graham and say, how can you work for somebody who talks about leveling Iran, who says that this is a good investment because of all of the oil that they have? We went to Andy Ogle's office, who is the one who said Muslims don't belong in this country, they should be deported, to say, you know, what kind of person do you work for that has this hatred, this kind of racist view of 2 billion people around the world? So we are constantly in action, supporting those in Congress who are doing good work and going after the ones who are keeping the war machine going. And we're so thankful to the Bay Area, because thanks to all the activism in the Bay Area, it helps to push the dial and set the standards for some of the other members of Congress who are so bad. So getting out in the streets, doing the protests, doing all of this activist work is really absolutely critical right now. And thank you, Cynthia, Code Pink, and all of the other activist groups in the Bay Area that keep this going. And thank you, Dennis, for keeping people educated.
Can I ask you one final question, Medea?
Sure.
Some people say they really support the vision and the kinds of work that you do, but they're afraid. How do you deal with fear? Are you ever afraid when you go into one of these buildings, when you go into Congress, when you know you're going to confront? Well, what happens in the fear front?
I'm not afraid there, but I'm so angry that I'm not afraid. But I understand people having fear, and I sympathize, especially people who are immigrants in this country or people who are even naturalized citizens having fear. And I think that's one of the reasons we don't see the numbers that we need to see out of the protests about this war in Iran. But I do think that, and I understand the fear when you see how ICE is treating people, not only how they are terrorizing the immigrant community, but also people who are out there trying to protect our brothers and sisters. So there's good reason to have fear in this country. I think that we have, those of us who have the privilege to overcome our fear, need to do that, and need to be just raising our level of absolute disgust at what our government is doing both at home and overseas, and use that anger to compel us to go further and go out of our comfort zones and overcome our fear.
Great place to leave it. We thank you, Medea. We thank Code Pink, Cynthia Papermaster, our weekly host. This is our weekly show now called Pink Notes, collaboration with Code Pink. Stay with us. Thank you all. We're going to take a
Dennis Bernstein with a, typically on Thursday, it's a new series he's doing with Pink Notes. Little ragged beginning there, and I don't want to waste any time about that. Let's see, that just went away. How about that? Let's hear an underwriting announcement, and tomorrow I'll probably have more about the war on Iran as it's Oscar night. I think it is. I'm not sure. Hollywood's big night, but actually half of the films are from different countries. How about that? I don't know whether O'Brien will riff on that or whether he'll say anything about the BS at CBS, or invite a late-night talk show host to step on stage and talk about Larry Ellison being related to the CIA. I guess it's just a fantasy dream anyway. Here's a gallery in town.
Programming at WEFT is brought to you in part by Cinema Gallery in downtown Urbana. A proud supporter of WEFT, Cinema Gallery is located at 120 West Main Street in the historic Urbana Cinema and represents 52 professional artists of the Midwest. For more information, visit cinemagallery.cc or follow Cinema Gallery on Instagram.
When we thank them for their support, I think I'm going to go to the couple of segments from the Counterspin program that's on alternately. They have a special on propaganda about Iran through the couple of decades, maybe. I couldn't find the Vijay Prashad segment that was listed as being included, but Trita Parsi's on board with some insights about regime change rhetoric from Trump's first administration, which I guess I had forgotten about. So let's listen to the intro, because it's kind of a roundup as well. It talks about $1 billion a day in the money for the war with, I could rap a while, but never mind. Let's turn it over to Janine Jackson. You can find this anywhere you find your podcast. I recommend it. Should have done the talk over.
Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, House Foreign Affairs Committee Chairman Brian Mast declared of Iran's regime has posed an imminent threat against every American, both at home and abroad, for the last 47 years, close quote, leading many at home and abroad to reach for their dictionaries. The Trump White House's war on Iran is unpopular in the U.S. Even the highest level of public support for this conflict falls far lower than that at the start of most other conflicts, including World War II, the Korean War, and the Iraq War, reports the New York Times. That may have something to do with the parade of rationales being offered. Popular Information has a roundup of the, so far, 17 different reasons the Trump regime has given to date for why we went to war. And all of it normalized by corporate media that allow recorded history to be put up for debate, that pretend we haven't seen what we've seen, leaving today's warmongers free to draw up a historical narrative, or several, that serve their present purpose. As we record on March 12th, some 251 groups have sent a letter to Congress demanding they vote against any additional funding for this unconstitutional war, which is now costing an estimated $1 billion a day. Signers included Public Citizen, the ACLU, Greenpeace, J Street, and National Nurses United. A supplemental worth $50 billion, the letter notes, would be enough to restore food assistance for 4 million Americans, establish universal pre-K education, and pay for the annual construction of more than 100,000 units of housing. Counterspin has been tracking U.S. news media failings, omissions, and propagandizing on Iran for decades. We're going to revisit some of those conversations today. You're listening to Counterspin, brought to you each week by the Media Watch Group FAIR. In August of 2018, Trump wasn't really obscuring that he wants what is blithely referred to as regime change in Iran, and media weren't hiding that either. But that's not the same as challenging it, as we well know. Counterspin talked about trying to get off the warpath with Trita Parsi, founder and former president of the National Iranian American Council and now executive vice president of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. Trump, at the time, was saying he was willing to meet with Iranian leadership without preconditions, 1 week after threat-tweeting the Iranian president with, quote, consequences the likes of which few throughout history have ever suffered before, close quote. CNN called that an abrupt shift in tone, even though we know abrupt shifts in tone are Trump's tone. But they also called the offer of a meeting an olive branch. I asked Trita Parsi if that were an appropriate depiction.
I think it would be quite inaccurate to call it an olive branch. At the end of the day, even if one were to accept it to be a genuine offer, and I think that's a question mark in and of itself, just the offer of having conversations while the actual policy is to escalate tensions, is to escalate economic pressure, is hardly an olive branch. An olive branch should at least bring forward some element of substance, and there was no such thing in anything that Trump has put on the table thus far.
Well, because Trump is Trump, there's room to say maybe he doesn't really mean it in Iran. Maybe it's a shiny object. What are the indicators that this administration truly intends, if not war, the sort of capitulation that is the goal of war?
Well, I think the problem is that this administration is not pursuing one foreign policy. It's pursuing five or six simultaneous foreign policies. So I think there is enough data out there to be able to say that, you know what, perhaps Trump actually is serious. He would at least like to have a deal with the Iranians. The idea of him having his name on the deal and the idea of him being able to say that it was a better deal than that of the previous administration certainly is attractive to him. But is that consistent with the approach that is being pursued by John Bolton and by Pompeo, et cetera, and the many actual things that are taking place right now in the manner in which the Trump administration is really undermining the Iranian economy? Reuters have reported that U.S. officials have said that their objective is to foment unrest in Iran, and we are seeing unrest in Iran. So mindful of the fact that this is an administration that has several simultaneous foreign policies, it makes it very difficult to be able to determine which one is the one that actually counts.
Right, right. Well, every time I hear that Trump or the United States are deeply concerned or primarily concerned with Iran's mistreatment of its own people, I sort of can't believe it's being reported without a laugh track. But you just talked about actual effects inside Iran, even if it sounds like it's just rhetoric or it's just saber rattling, there are actions here and they're having an effect inside Iran. What have been some of the effects within Iran of Trump's words and actions?
Well, even from the very moment he came into office, he has been undermining the nuclear deal and creating so much uncertainty as to whether it would survive or not, that even before he actually pulled out of the deal, he was in violation of the deal, and he was making sure that European and other businesses were either not going into the market or starting to get out of the Iranian market. And part of the reason why this is important is because a big part of the nuclear deal was that the Iranians would agree to restrictions to their nuclear program in return for sanctions relief. Trump was undermining and sabotaging the sanctions relief. In fact, the uncertainty that he injected into the atmosphere was in and of itself a de facto sanction. And that has contributed. It's not the sole cause, but it certainly has been a major cause as to why the Iranian economy is doing as badly as it is right now. There is very likely some form of currency manipulation taking place as well that is causing the Iranian currency to drop at a very fast pace right now. And these are all part of a policy of pressuring the Iranians in the hope that they will capitulate. I doubt that they will. I don't see panic in the Iranian government at this point, although the people are really, really suffering from the combination of Trump's sanctions and sabotage of the nuclear deal, Iranian government's own mismanagement and corruption in the economy, as well as the political repression that has taken place there.
Trita Parsi from Trump's first term. That's amazing. And I meant to bring up in some context the line that I heard on the 21st show when they had some material, some people on talking about Iran. A scholar at Northeastern mentioned that there was some kind of economic manipulation which crashed their currency, which led to the retrenchment of subsidies, et cetera, that caused a lot of the distress that, but more on that later. But it's amazing that he was talking about that kind of economic destabilization that long ago. All right, you can find that and other historic pieces about propaganda about Iran on. I had just queued that up and I just dequeued it up. This is more Medea Benjamin, and as usual, I promised more than I'll be able to get on. Marjorie Cohn, perhaps tomorrow, talking about the illegalities of it all. And more. She's a great, great scholar, activist. Thanks. Here's Medea Benjamin, and I had this queued, but we're going to just play it on the fly here, I guess, huh? And one of those days. Gus is back. Great to see you, Gus. Looking forward to a Radio Free Labor. I'm laboring, as you can tell. And, oh my. Well, we'll have to go to Plan B here again. And, certainly won't have time for Marjorie Cohn. We're going to go back to Mia Benjamin from the Code Pink podcast. And I'll roughly get it code, get it queued up. And one of those days, for sure. I'll play Mumia again. That would be good. And, yeah, what else was I going to ask about?
Human Rights Watch has come out with a report that Israel has illegally launched white phosphorus munitions over residential areas of Lebanon. White phosphorus can scar the lungs, suffocate people, poison the kidneys and liver. In short, the entire world should be outraged at Trump and Netanyahu's war on Iran, on Lebanon. But Republicans and a handful of Democrats in Congress do not share our outrage. Medea, I know you're on Capitol Hill virtually every day. Please tell us about the votes on those anti-war resolutions and whether you think there will be more to come soon.
There were two votes. There was one on the House and one on the Senate. They came very close. Unfortunately, in the Senate, we have that rogue Senator Fetterman, who always goes with the Republicans. And we had on the House four Democrats, who are now calling the Forever War for. And in fact, we will be going to their offices to tell them how disgusted we are with them, because if they had voted with the Democrats, it would have passed. So I just want to say the name of those four. It's Greg Landsman, Jared Golden, Henry Cuellar, and Juan Vargas. Those are the Forever War Four. Yes, there will be more votes coming up. There will be joint resolutions in the Senate. The senators have announced that they will be bringing them up, but we don't know when. And, you know, they are feeling the pressure from their base that is saying, do something about it. In fact, we've been going to Congress all week long and saying, all right, what are you doing? Where's, at minimum, the statement that you put out? Where is the letter that you put out that you want other members of the House and Senate to sign on to? Where is the bill that we could be pushing? So everybody needs to be outraged and contacting their members of Congress and say, what are you doing to stop this war?
Absolutely. It's unbelievable that, well, I guess it's not unbelievable, but it's certainly repugnant that you have members of Congress ignoring public opinion, which is against this war. And even Trump knows that. We'll get to that. More Republicans are speaking out, not necessarily, I mean, Republicans in Congress, not necessarily about Trump's bombing of Iran, but about him wearing a baseball cap to a ceremony honoring six U.S. soldiers killed in the Iran strikes over their more upset about that than they are over Trump's decision to launch an unprovoked war. I was reading this white baseball cap with big gold USA letters just happens to retail on the Trump store for $55. You can't make this stuff up. Talk about war profiteering.
But as you said, more Republicans are starting to speak out because, once again, it is their base that is really saying this is not what we voted for. There was an interesting online interaction between Senator Lindsey Graham, who we could talk more about because he's been disgusting about this. But he said something about how he'd be honored to send his sons and daughters from South Carolina to fight for this war, in which Nancy Mace, who is no dove herself, came out and said, what are you talking about? I don't want to send anybody from South Carolina to fight in this war. So they're starting to fight among themselves, which is actually good.
I'm wondering if Lindsey Graham is auditioning for a leadership role in Israel. I'm serious. The Wall Street Journal reported that he went to Israel to meet with Netanyahu, or he met with him somewhere, not positive, but he met with him to, quote, coach Netanyahu on how to convince Trump, if he needed convincing, to bomb Iran.
That's right. It is Lindsey Graham is the most hawkish of all. And it's not just about Iran. He was horrible and is horrible about Venezuela and Cuba as well. And I don't know if you saw, he said something about how between Iran and Venezuela, they have 31% of the world's oil supply. So this is a great investment on our money.
Well, Lindsey Graham's Twitter feed, I checked it yesterday, and he not only was threatening to blow up, you know, Iran, but he was upset that Saudi Arabia was not fully cooperating with the U.S. strikes on Iran and that maybe Saudi Arabia would be next. So this guy is completely unhinged. I will say that I checked his polling numbers and they were like 28% in South Carolina. He does have a challenger, a Dr. Annie Andrews, a pediatrician who is against these forever wars. And he's up for re-election in November. So let's stay tuned, see what happens there. Meanwhile, a recent NPR Marist poll of 1,591 adults in the U.S. found that 56% oppose U.S. military action in Iran. Only 36% approve. Some don't know where they're at. The partisan divide is sharp. 84% of Republicans support the U.S. bombing of Iran. 86% of Democrats oppose the war. Of course, at Code Pink, we're anti-war. We've been warning for decades of the dangers of a U.S. attack on Iran. Mindy, tell us what Code Pink has done in the past on this.
Well, first, I want to mention a recent poll about Iranian Americans, because there is this misperception that Iranian Americans are all in favor of this. And in fact, last week, there were some demonstrations in Los Angeles, here in Washington, D.C., of Iranian Americans that support the Shah and want the Shah's son, Pahlavi, to be returned to Iran. And it's funny, they chant about, "We want democracy," and then they have signs that say the king. They want King Pahlavi. They also carry not only Iranian flags, but Israeli flags. But this poll, Marcy, it said that the Iranian American community is divided pretty much 50-50%. So a lot of Iranian Americans do not support this war, especially after the first day when they saw that all of those young girls who were killed. You ask about our work in Iran, and it's very sad. I remember when before the war in Iraq broke out, we had a Code Pink delegation that was in Iraq. And when we were there, when Colin Powell gave that talk at the UN saying that there were weapons of mass destruction, and everybody knew the U.S. was going to start bombing. And Jody Evans, co-founder of Code Pink, and I were there holding on to each other. And she said, "What are we going to do? What are we going to do?" And we said, "We stop the next war." And that was Iran. And we've been trying to stop a war with Iran for decades now. In fact, it's so sad that we have to dig out our old banners that say peace with Iran, no war in Iran. And Code Pink has taken delegations to Iran several times on these citizen diplomacy type efforts because we knew, I mean, how could we know and the people in Trump's administration don't know what a disaster. And of course, so many presidents knew that it was going to be a disaster that four decades of U.S. presidents refused to go to war in Iran for Israel because they knew it would be a regional war, which it obviously is.
Yeah, and you have to wonder what was Trump thinking when he ordered these strikes? Because like you said, this has been going on for 40 years with Israel demanding the U.S. bomb Iran. And even the genocidal president, George Bush, who invaded and occupied Iraq and caused untold deaths, casualties, displacement, even he would not go along with this plan. So I don't know. What do you think? What was the rationale?
Oh, well, I think it was a lot of what Marco Rubio said, that we knew that Israel was going to go to war with Iran and we were going to be involved in it anyway, so we might as well get involved. And of course, we just talked about Lindsey Graham and his concern about the oil, which I think is coming out more and more. There are these cartoons that says, boy, the U.S. is lucky. Everywhere they invade seems to have a lot of oil. Certainly coming on the heels of Venezuela, you have to seriously ask how much this is about oil, because Iran does have quite a lot of oil. So there's Israel, there's oil, there's, you know, this military industrial complex that always finds another war to get us into and seems to be very excited when we spend $1 billion a day on war instead of the people's needs at home.
Yeah, I mean, 60% of the people in this country are living paycheck to paycheck. People are suffering without health care. As Trump and his cronies take an axe to government services so that they can continue to fund these forever wars. When I think about the factors that led to this, there could be multiple factors. There may not be just one. It could be the last gasp of the U.S. empire, seizing control of the oil and the petrodollar, because we know that there's a concern amongst Trump and the billionaire class about countries abandoning the dollar and sending the dollar collapsing on world markets. We'll see. Israel, why did he bomb Iran? Israel does control a lot of Congress. We have to be honest about that. And the MAGA base, which believes in the rapture, which believes that Christ will return when there is this incendiary, this war in the Middle East. And when he returns, he will then save everybody except those like Jews who don't believe that Jesus Christ is a God. So there's this Christian fundamentalist belief in that. And, you know, I even heard people joke, well, Trump was bored, B-O-R-E-D, with the Peace Board, or yes, bored with peace. He didn't get the Nobel Peace Prize, so he's going to show them. And maybe he just cannot say no to Lindsey Graham.
Well, and yes, let's not take lightly that messianic view that a number of people now we see in the military are having. In fact, there are members of the military who are complaining about their higher-ups using this kind of biblical justification. And I recently had an encounter with Senator Kramer, who has a big Israeli flag outside of his office door in the Senate. And he said to me that we have a biblical obligation to Israel. So, you know, there are a lot of people, we talk a lot about the lobby group like AIPAC, but we have to talk more about the Christian Zionists, the groups like Christians United for Israel, because they do have a tremendous influence, not only in our Congress, but also in our White House and also in the military.
Yes, and even despite all of that, Trump seems to be worried. Okay, so he held a press conference at Mar-a-Lago. He said he had two key objectives: calm the markets, the stock market. Well, it appeared he had these objectives: to calm the stock market and to prepare people for him to say, "We won, it's over." It might be kind of difficult for him to say it's over and to mean it's over right now. Iran has no reason to trust the United States. Twice, Trump has bombed Iran or assassinated leaders during peace negotiations. So I'm thinking that Iran would want something in cement, not just in writing, but certainly it would want those funds that the U.S. froze.
Right. And lifting of the sanctions, which it has been calling for such a long time now. And Marcy, in terms of this calming the markets, I mean, we should say that the barrel of oil went up briefly to $120 a barrel. It went down quite a lot since Trump said this might be over soon. But his people are watching the markets very carefully. I think they care more about the markets. Well, I was going to say than they do about public opinion, but public opinion in the U.S. is very much tied to the price of oil at the gas pump. You know, I find it unfortunate, Marcy, that we live in a country where our citizens are more concerned about how much more money they're going to pay for gas than they are about the people being bombed in the Middle East. But unfortunately, that's where we are. And so Trump is watching the price of oil very closely.
Yes. And I read in Haaretz, which is considered a liberal newspaper in Israel, that Netanyahu is not surprised by Trump's remarks that the war is, quote, pretty much complete and could end soon, adding that Israel is preparing for the possibility that Trump will seek to end U.S. strikes in the near future. Partly, the newspaper says, due to the lack of support for this war in the United States. And certainly we see uprisings across the globe, denunciations, protests against the U.S.-Israeli military onslaught in Iran have occurred globally in London, Athens, Jakarta, Baghdad, Pakistan, Mexico City. In Yemen, a million people marched against the U.S.-Israel attacks on Iran. In Nigeria, demonstrators burned U.S. and Israeli flags in solidarity with Iran. In Pakistan, a dozen people were killed, 100 injured when police fired on demonstrators scaling the outer wall of the U.S. consulate.
Well, Marcy, you should mention there that when you kill the Ayatollah Khamenei, that's like killing the Pope for the Catholics. And so for many of the Shia Muslims in these countries that you mentioned, they are incensed that the leader in the Shia world was murdered. So there are lots and lots of reasons that people are rising up, one of them just because they don't want more war, and they also see this as part of the war for Israel. And we know how many people around the world have been standing up for the Palestinians, and so many of them are the same people now who are standing up and saying, stop these wars in the Middle East that are killing so many people, especially in the Muslim community.
Yes, and bravo to Spain's Prime Minister, Pedro Sanchez. He's blocking the U.S. from using joint military bases in Spain for refueling operations targeting Iran. He's labeling these actions illegal and dangerous. So Trump's response has been to threaten to cut off trade with Spain, but that could be tough because Spain is, hello, part of the European Union single market. So the EU handles trade policy for all 27 member states. What does that mean? It means that if Trump targeted Spain for a trade ban, that would require action against the entire EU bloc. And I don't think he can afford to cut off trade with all 27 nations.
I don't think so. And bravo to Spain for doing that. But, you know, the prime minister there is listening to the huge outcry in Spain against this war. We only wish that more members, leaders in Europe were doing that, because there are huge demonstrations against the war in Europe. But the European leaders continue to be lackeys to the United States. And unfortunately, there are all too few of them, the exception being somebody like Pedro Sanchez, who will stand up to the U.S., even though Europe is being hurt by this massive increase in the prices of energy.
I'm glad that you use the word lackeys and not allies. It's really gotten under my skin lately when I hear people even on the left talk about U.S. allies, because these are not allies. They are vassals, servants, or their client states, or their lackeys. So let's try not to use that word, okay? Meanwhile, some of the billionaires are not happy about this either. There's a man named Khalaf Ahmad al-Abatour. Forgive me if I mispronounced his name. He is a prominent business person from the UAE, and he is demanding that Donald Trump explain why the United States chose to pursue war with Iran and whether the U.S. president has considered the potential risks to Gulf nations who are the targets of retaliatory strikes, their bases, the U.S. military bases. In an open letter to Trump on X, Habtour, he attacked Trump's decision, saying, who gave you the authority to drag our region into a war with Iran? And on what basis did you make this dangerous decision? Did you calculate the collateral damage before pulling the trigger? And did you consider that the first to suffer from this escalation would be the countries of the region itself, specifically countries that are hosting U.S. military bases? Let me see if I can count them all. Kuwait, UAE, Saudi Arabia. Who else?
Bahrain.
Yeah, Bahrain. Absolutely. Qatar. You know, it's bizarre, right? Because I often check Al Jazeera for news. And that is, correct me if I'm wrong, that is the state news outlet for Qatar, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And, you know, these Gulf states are shameless in that they haven't been standing up and saying, what another unprovoked war. That billionaire that you mentioned is supposedly really speaking for some of the leaders like the UAE, who doesn't have the nerve to stand up to Trump directly and say that. But they are really suffering now. And what is so interesting, Marcy, is that they allowed the U.S. to have bases on their soil because it was supposed to be protection for them. And now they see that having these bases is exactly the opposite. Having the bases is what is making them a target. So even though they are upset with Iran for attacking them, they are thinking twice about this. Well, you told me not to use the word ally, but allyship they have with the U.S. that has led to this tight military cooperation that has actually come back to bite them.
Well, you know, I posted, I think it was on one of the social media platforms, you know, how much longer will it be before these Gulf states shut down the U.S. military bases? And somebody wrote back, it may not be their decision, right? They just may be shut down and people may be helicoptered out of there. I don't know, like Saigon, the final days of our war on Vietnam. I don't know. It's hard for me, Medea, to imagine these military bases operating as business as usual. What do you think?
I think this is a coming to Jesus moment, to use a religious term. I think these countries are going to have to really rethink their relationship. You know, you take a country like Bahrain, in which there are a lot of Shias, but the Sunnis are in control, and they have been celebrating when the base was hit because they don't want the U.S. base there. And so it's really stirring up a lot of disagreement and dissent within countries. And these countries don't want to see another Arab Spring where people coming out on the street and demanding they start represent the people instead of the billionaire class and the U.S. And, you know, the Saudi Arabia, which wanted to have good relationships with Israel, was moving in that direction. And then the Gaza genocide happened, and now this, and they know that they have to be really careful because people in the Gulf region are just incensed about what their governments are doing and how they're standing with the U.S. and Israel.
Yes, and we are incensed here. Let's go to Breakthrough News.
That's from the Code Pink broadcast. We heard the new show from Flashpoints called Pink Notes on Thursdays. Medea Benjamin, she was here on campus once quite a long time ago, when she was pitching her book on the House of Saud. She's such an activist, but she's written a number of books, including a very controversial one, her take on the war in Ukraine, which I'm down with it. I haven't talked about it in quite a while. It's difficult to do. Opinions you hear are those of the speakers, not necessarily shared by others at the station. Thanks for supporting WEFT. I got an underwriting announcement. And then Radio Free Labor going to rip. Maybe it'll just run another couple of hours today. Gus is fired up. I just disclaimed, and here's the underwriting announcement that's up. Resistance Threads, welcome to the underwriting phenomena. If you want to support, I always call out the chess club, if there is one. Signing off for news from Neptune here.
This hour of programming on WEFT is brought to you in part by Resistance Threads, a curated vintage shop. Resistance Threads features clothing and accessories from the 1960s through the 2000s, plus upcycled pieces by Zombie Parts. Woman-owned, locally owned, Resistance Threads also hosts community events through 217 Flea. Updates daily on social media at Resistance Threads Vintage.